Our 2008 West Coast School of the Prophets. The theme for the weekend, How to Master the Secrets of Bible Study. Our speaker this weekend is Brother Roger Lewis from the Christ Church North Ecclesia in New Zealand. This is session... It's entitled, How to Learn the Secret of Sound Reasoning by Bible Principles. Brother Roger?
Well, this afternoon's session, you remember that we ran out of time this morning to really get into this in detail. And so what we're going to do this afternoon is I'm going to spend the first few minutes talking about the idea or the concept of reasoning, sound reasoning by Bible principles, and then we're going to do some workshop activity on this particular area. So let's just take some overriding principles to start with, and then we'll work through an illustration to get you going, and then I'm going to break you off into groups right through till tea time. But we're going to have time to bring the results of the groups back, hopefully to go onto the whiteboard of postmodernism or whatever it is that we're going to put it on. So firstly then, some principles by which we want to talk about this aspect of sound Bible reasoning. So we need to learn to use Bible principles. Why? Because we live in a postmodern world that's gone mad, that vaunts the ability of every individual person to remember, decide all of their own truths for themselves. If it happens that your truths are completely opposite to the chap's next door, well, that's his bad luck because you ain't going to change. And so you're happy for him to believe whatever he wants to believe because remember, you don't actually care what he believes because you don't need to care. So remember we said this morning that postmodernism masquerades as the caring face of humanism, but in fact will breed a society of people who are so inward thinking and so self-centered that it could well lead to societal breakdown in the future because the whole sense of community is absolutely lost. And that's where we're different. Not only are we subject to divine principles and we seek to be obedient unto them because we're inspired by them, but we also seek that principle of mutual submission as a community, that our objective is always to seek the greatest good of the truth and the greatest good of the ecclesia and the greatest good of the Father's purpose rather than our own individual liberty or rights. So we've got to get back to the Bible. That's our only guarantee of getting back to sanity. So we want to use Bible principles to assess and solve a problem. And one of the reasons why that's beneficial is because, of course, Bible principles immediately help us to view the whole matter from the divine perspective. You see, it's easy if I spoke to you about a principle in ecclesial life. We have a decision that the ecclesia has to make. Should they go this way or should they go that way? Let's discuss what the Bible says. And we meet as a community and we probably can relate to those sorts of decisions perhaps being made in ecclesial life. But we're not just talking about ecclesial life here. We're talking about life in general, the day-to-day issues that you and I face in our everyday life, decisions we will have to make, stands for the truth, things that we might proclaim for or proclaim against, matters that we will wish to stand aside from, things that we will not want to be associated with, what we would be prepared to see or do or company with, and what we shouldn't see or do or be associated with. What divine principles will be brought to bear on all of those day-to-day activities of our life? And one of the great things about using Bible principles to make a decision for daily life is we tend to sort of think that the truth's over here and daily life's over here. Sunday morning is at the meeting, Monday morning is work. That's a whole different ball game. Really? It's not supposed to be. For people living by the principle of God manifestation, Monday is actually meant to be identical to Sunday in terms of our thinking, our principles, our values. I know we're doing something different on Monday, but we're the same person walking in the ways of the Father. So this is a real challenge. And the good thing about Bible principles is that they force you to see what you otherwise would have thought were ordinary daily life problems and to see them from a divine perspective. That's very helpful when you start to apply this process. And here's the second point. You see, any problem may have several Bible principles that might be brought to bear on arriving at a scripturally sound answer. And that's a good thing as well. Sometimes the particular problem or the particular issue we're facing doesn't have any one Bible passage to answer it. Maybe no one Bible principle to answer it. It might be a compound of several ideas or several issues. Now, by the way, why is that good? Why is that a good thing? Yes, you need to firstly realise that life is never so simple that every problem has one single answer and one single Bible quote for it. Life doesn't work like that. Sometimes you think it is when you're 15 or even when you're 20. By the time you're 30, they realise actually there's three principles, and by the time you're 60, you're aware of seven that are all juggling for priority in the same space, and all of which you need to somehow give due honour to. Because as we deepen in our spiritual understanding, we realise that sometimes there's a multiplicity of factors that are brought to bear on various situations. So what's good about this is it forces us to think about the issue, forces us to think about the dimensions of the issue, forces us to say what's the real part of this issue that we should give the greatest weight to, the greatest concern to. Bible principles, and I think this is extremely valuable, Bible principles are by their very nature non-specific, and therefore their application to a specific problem has to be thought out carefully. Now imagine, for example, if there was a quotation in the Bible that said, "Thou shalt not wear pink ties." Would we have any pink ties in the ecclesia? Well, probably not. We might have an ecclesia that's got no ties. It's a different issue altogether. But let's say we've got an ecclesia that does wear ties. Thou shalt wear no pink ties. We're probably unlikely to have too much of a problem with pink ties. But there is a problem, because why? Why do we have no pink ties? Well, because there's a law that says that there should be no pink ties. There's a Bible quote that says you're not allowed to do it. So there's no pink ties because it's mere conformity to law. But that's Judaism. So whilst it would be very convenient to have a quotation that said, "Thou shalt not have any pink ties," the trouble is that then we do it because, well, simply because it says so, and not because we understand that there was any divine principle involved as to why we might or might not wear pink ties. And the problem is, what if someone then comes in wearing a particularly gaudy and obnoxious and bilious green tie? Well, because there's no Bible quotes on green ties. So now you're back to trying to decipher, but is there a principle involved about bilious green ties? And that's the whole point, you see, is that Bible principles, because they don't... There isn't a quote that says that you should smoke or not smoke. There isn't a quote that says that you should go to the movies and watch Titanic or not watch Titanic or watch some other movie or not watch them. There's no quote on those. There's only principles. But that's actually really good. Because now we've got to stop and think about, well, how does that principle or how do these principles apply to the particular problem that I've got in life right now? And you have to think about it. What that's saying is you've got to apply Bible reasoning. And I think one of the lessons that comes out of this for me is if we can't find satisfactory Bible principles to support what we're doing, then we need to think about whether to continue or not. I think there are far too many things that we do in life where we press on, and in fact, if we really stop to think about it, we've got no biblical basis or no biblical foundation for what we're doing at all. So why are you doing it? If we're supposed to be the people of the book and manifesting the Father and living by his principles, why are we doing some things in life for which we have no biblical reasons why we are supposed to be doing that? If in doubt, leave it out. Or get back to the book and do some serious thinking about whether you should be doing this or that or thus or so. It's too easy to live our lives by default, saying, well, I do this because No one's told me I can't. Who's the big no one that was going to tell you? The ABs? The ecclesia? Do you want them to boss you round? Do you want them to run your life? Do you want them to tell you what to do so you don't ever have to think for yourself? Do you want mindless conformity to the rule of law? I thought we're supposed to decide biblically for ourselves what we should or shouldn't do. So there's an imperative here. Those that aspire to the greatest spirituality in their lives will always seek a biblical reason for why they're doing what they're doing. They'll want to know that. They'll want to feel that that's there buttressing what they're doing in life as part of their confidence. So when we come to a specific problem, we need to follow, therefore, a proper Bible process in using Bible reasoning. The first thing we've got to do is we've got to say, well, what are the specific issues in this problem? We've got a problem, all right, what are the dimensions and the facets and the aspects and the issues of this problem? We need to get the problem down clearly. By the way, you probably all know that that's one of the critical ingredients of good problem solving. You've got to write the problem down in as many different ways as you can. What really is the problem? Sometimes when you write it down, you realise that what you thought was the problem isn't the problem at all. And by the way, you'll know in ecclesial life, particularly the wisdom of learning to differentiate between symptoms and problems. There are many things that happen in life where you think, oh, look at this, it's happened. Yes, but is it a problem? Yes, it's a terrible problem. Well, you sure it's a problem, or is it a symptom of a problem? A symptom of a problem, for example, could be a young lady who starts coming to the meeting and says, I'm not going to wear a hat anymore. She said, well, that's a problem. Is it? It might be a symptom of a problem that she's got a deeper problem about the role of sisters, the authority of the text of the 1 Corinthians 11, the process of the hierarchy of brothers and sisters in ecclesial life, the applicability of the Pauline council to the modern day. There could be another problem deeper behind the mere not wearing of the hat. You've got to find out what the problem is. So one of the good things about this is we've got to become specific about the problem. The second thing is we then say, well, so what Bible principles might be involved in this problem? And that's when it gets really interesting. Because now we've really got to put our thinking caps on. Because remember what I said, there's not going to be a Bible quote about pink ties. There's not going to be a Bible quote about that specific movie, about that specific book, about that specific piece of music. You're going to have to think wider and deeper than that. What specific Bible passages in particular might be relevant to this problem? And lastly, what overall Bible solution do we think then should be applied to this problem? Given all of those factors and weighing it all up, so what conclusion would we come to? Well, let me give you an illustration of that particular idea by going through a quick example run. So what I'm going to do is maybe suggest that you just break into your individual tables right now. So stay in your existing tables for purpose of this exercise. I might get you to turn around and face the gentleman behind you if that's all right. We'll make a fourth out of this one. Otherwise we have one in splendid isolation. But all the other tables will be fine. So here's the problem, right? Let me give you the dimensions of the problem. Now what I want you to do is to give me the best biblical solution that you think you can to this problem. I want you to tell me what issues you think are involved, what biblical passages come to mind that will be relevant, and also what you then think you should do about it and why. All reason from the Bible. I want nothing other than biblical evidence. And guess what I don't want you to say on any of this? What would be the worst thing? What's the worst thing you could say? I feel. I feel. All right, so here we go. Here's the problem. A memorial meeting has just concluded and you're leaving the hall. A car drives off from the hall car park with a heavy beat of loud pop music blaring out from the open windows. The music can be heard as the car goes down the street. Should you A, ignore the matter, B, deal with it privately, C, raise it publicly or at a business meeting? Is there an issue at all, or is it just personal preference at work? What thinkest thou? Oh, and by the way, I might make it slightly more interesting. The car that's just driven off from the hall car park is driven by a young brother. All right, so now what I'm going to do is ask you to go into your groups. So we might stop the video at this point of time, and I'll give you 5 minutes or so to consult in your groups now as to what biblical issues you think might spring to mind. All right, can I call all the groups to order? And so let's talk about what we've discovered in the course of your group sessions. So would some group like to start off? Let me just talk about this. I think what we'll do is that the best way to do this is to talk about, let me do a mind map here. So we're going to start off with the issue in the middle, which is, what was it? Okay, so loud music after the meeting. Okay, now the next thing is that what we probably want to do is, I think, start with, is because we'll get complicated otherwise, I think we need to start by saying what principles did we think are involved, what Bible principles, and then we'll add the quotations on a further rung outside that. Otherwise we'll get mixed up if we ask for quotations and principles. So let's talk about the actual issues. What Bible issues did people think could be involved in this particular problem?
Not giving glory to God in all things.
Okay, what was the not giving glory to God in all things?
1 Corinthians 10:31 and 32.
Okay. All right, not giving glory to God. That's fine. All right, put that down. Rightio. Was the black one okay?
Yeah.
Okay, let's stay with black. Okay, what other issues? Yep.
Separateness from the world.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
Being an example to others.
Ah, good. Yep. What else?
Understanding as to what the memorial is all about.
Okay. Appreciation of memorials. Yep. Anything else? Let me check my crib sheet. Ho ho. Yep. Okay, here's a couple more. It looks the same as this, but it's not. Okay, well, I think you've got a good number of issues there. So we've got several things that have sprung out of this particular matter. There's the question of consideration of others. There's the matter of setting an example to others. There's the matter of the memorial meeting itself and the person's appreciation of the memorial meeting. There's the matter of not giving glory to God, of separation from the world, perhaps even the issue of what's music all about and what's the purpose of music, especially in the context of driving off after a memorial meeting. What sort of music would be appropriate for a saint of God at that particular moment of their time? So that's good. Excellent. That's a very good start, by the way. Now, shall we try and flesh that out? You've got another one?
Ben. No, I was just going to say, prior to checking out the Bible principles, Micah brought up in our group, is there another issue that's arising, because why is he listening to pop music right after the memorial meeting?
Yes, that would
so
be...
it might be a symptom of another...
Exactly. And so really what these are all saying, so we'll leave it as it stands, but I hear what you're saying, it's a good point. This lack of consideration and lack of example and lack of appreciation and lack of separation could well be symptomatic of a deeper problem, of which the pop music is just the symptom. And this is that we've got a young brother who spiritually isn't going very well at all. That's your point, isn't it? So therefore there's a deeper issue here. It could be that we've got to address his whole spiritual attitude and what we can do to help him. And if we could solve that, then we might actually have solved the pop music issue as well. However, we would probably use the pop music issue as the basis to go and have a talk to him. So look, this is what happened. I wanted to come have a chat to you. You know, can we talk this through? Talk about some of the issues. And maybe use that as the opportunity to say, why is this happening? How are you feeling? Why is this going on at the moment, do you think? And try and get to that deeper issue that might lie behind all these. Absolutely right. So let's talk about what scriptural passages we might use to flesh that out on the on that mind map. What could you think of? So you got some passages, yep?
Yes, for the consideration of others, there was 1 Corinthians 8, verses 9 to 11, and this is concerning the consideration of weaker brothers in eating meat sacrifice.
Yep, that's good. Yep.
James 4, verse 4, against separation from the world.
Which says? Okay, James 4, verse 4. Yep. Ben?
Ephesians 4, 17 basically 20, which is as being an example. I affirm and testify in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do, the futility of their minds. They're darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. Through the hardness of the heart, they become callous and given themselves up to licentiousness. Greedy to practice every kind of uncleanness, you did not so learn Christ.
Verses 17 to 20. 20. Right? Good. Yep. Anything else? Yes. Jason.
1 John 2, 15, for separation from the world, which is love not the world, neither things of the world.
1 John 2,
verse 15.
Verse 15. Okay, that's good. Yep. Yeah? What does that say?
It says, be ye not doers of the word, and not hearers. Be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving themselves, for be a hearer of the word, like a man pulling his natural face in the glass.
Was it 22 and 23?
Actually, 22 to 25.
22 to 25. Okay, what else have we got? Any other passages? Yeah?
For music, we had Ephesians 5. Basically verses 19 and 20, which says, address one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with all your heart, always and for everything giving thanks in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to God.
Yep. So good quotation. So look, that's the beginning of some quotation. I had a few others. Effect on the memorial meeting after the 1 Corinthians 11, 26 to 28. Music is for praise, 1 Chronicles 16, 9, Colossians 3, 16, Ephesians 5, 19, same passage, Ephesians, James 5, 13, 1 Corinthians 10, 31, separation from the world, Galatians 6, 7 to 9, Titus 2, verse 12, Ephesians 5, verse 3, Ephesians 4, verse 17, 1 John 2, verses 15, we got that one. So there's a whole consideration of others, first of Corinthians chapter 10, verse 32, and 11, verse 33, as well as chapter 8. Role model to others, first of Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, Titus 2, 6 to 8. So how to deal with it. So now give me some principles or some biblical quotations as to how we might deal with it. So now we come to the interesting bit. Yep.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Are we able to question some of these?
Yes, sure. Go right ahead.
The appreciation of memorial
Yes.
Could you just elaborate on that? Because,
yes,
really, I mean, are we then saying that if it's after memorial meeting, it's not okay, but on Monday, it's okay?
Ah, good question.
And that would, and the scriptural principle behind that would be 2 Kings 17, which says, talking about the children of Israel, how they did secretly those things that were not right. But it emphasizes throughout the chapter how that they feared Yahweh, yet served their own graven images. So you have the outward appearance Sunday morning, but the rest of the week they're doing their own thing.
Yep, that's a very valid thing. I suppose the only reason we brought this matter in was because the terms of reference that I gave for the problem related it specifically to the memorial meeting. But you're quite right. If we changed the puzzle and said it was happening on Monday, it'll all still apply. Absolutely. But there's an additional issue, if you like, on Sunday, is that if it was inappropriate on Monday, it's even more inappropriate on Sunday, immediately after the memorial meeting. So as long as we all understand that, this is not saying that it's okay on Monday, it's saying that it's even more incongruous in the context of driving out immediately after a memorial meeting. Yes?
So one of the things that we talked about in that group was that, because music is a very subjective thing, and we all have different opinions about what is acceptable or non-acceptable music. So I kind of feel, and I stand to be correct, that if the music is scripturally objectionable, then we should definitely do something. But if it's just music that we might not like, but it's just our opinion and our conscience isn't offended, and there's no way we can scripturally say, well, this is objectionable, it really becomes like just our opinion. Do you know what I'm saying? So in this example, are we agreeing that the music is clearly scripturally wrong, and we'd all listen to it and say, wow, that's terrible?
I probably should have changed the word pop music and said heavy metal or something, so that it was clear that it probably would not pass muster with most of the group here. There was another issue, you're quite right. I mean, there is an issue about the exact nature of the music, but there was another thing in the puzzle too, wasn't there? It wasn't just that music was playing. How was it playing?
Loud.
What was the state of the window of the car?
Okay,
and so this driving down the road business with it blaring out is not just consideration for other people in the meeting or example to other young people in the ecclesia, it's what do all the Gentiles down the road think of Christadelphians, and of what their spiritual gatherings are about, and of separation, etc. So there's another layer here of the what's the phrase about, you know, about our how we should display ourselves before the Gentiles. Can you think of any passages there?
1 Timothy 4:12. Let no man despise thy youth. Be thou an example of believers in word, conversation, charity, and spirit, faith, and purity.
So
1 Timothy 4:12.
4:12. Yep.
1 Corinthians 10:32.
Yep. Is it 10:32?
Yeah. Actually, verse 31 as well is quite good. Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. That's kind of good.
Yep.
1 Peter 2:12.
Yep.
Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in your conversation.
They may by your good works glorify God, probably not from heavy metal music blaring out the open window as you rev off down the street. So that's right. So there's an issue with Gentiles as well here. So let's say there's a few problems. But by the way, this is good, because all of a sudden, and I've probably added about another dozen quotes that you didn't have, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have, by the way, I'm just simply saying there's lots of quotations. We could probably put 20 quotations up on the board. And all that's saying is that there are lots of lines of scriptural thought that might play into this particular issue and strengthen our conviction that there is something we need to deal with. So if we get to the stage of now, how do we deal with the problem? Can you think of any scriptural principle, passages rather, that come to mind with how we might deal with the problem? I'll give you one just to sort of get you thinking. Maybe someone could, how to deal. Okay, here's the first one. Galatians 6:1. What does that say? Anyone know?
If you see a man overtaken in a fault,
Ye which are restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. All right? Okay, yep, so that's good. So can you think of any other passages in that context?
2 Timothy 2:25.
Yep, what does that say? Yep, good one. 2 Timothy 2:25. Here's another one for you to think about. Proverbs 25, verse 9. Would someone like to read that out?
I got it.
Okay.
Proverbs 25, verse 9. Argue your case with your neighbor himself, and do not disclose another's secret.
So one of the things that we must learn, by the way, even for something that seems obvious, is that we never judge in a matter until we've heard both sides. And sometimes, even when you think it's obvious that there's a problem, you never start by saying, "Brother, I want to have a talk to you. I was most unhappy with what you did, and I want to tell you what the biblical principles are." No. Back a step. What Proverbs says is, and there's another terrific proverb that says that every man's cause seems just until his neighbour comes and finds him out. And what it's saying is that your view's always right until you hear the other side, and you suddenly think, actually, there is another side. I hadn't thought about that. For example, could you think of anything that might justify why that young brother's done what he did that day? Yeah.
Well, I was drawn to Hebrews 5, where it says that everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness. He is a babe. Could very well just be ignorance.
Yep, it could be that. Could be ignorance.
His window and radio are broken.
Both his window and his radio are broken. But the car fortunately isn't. A serendipitous turn of events. It could be that. It could be something as dramatic as he lost his girlfriend yesterday and his father died the night before, and right now he's probably in a bad space. And so he did something stupid, but there were mitigating circumstances. It doesn't explain it, it doesn't justify it, but this could be a background to it. So the point with this, what Proverbs says, and it's a very good piece of counsel, by the way, and I counsel you to learn this, to all learn this in terms of all ecclesial issues. No matter what you see as a problem, always find out whether there is another side before you proceed to the matter of actually dealing with it. So what that would mean is we would start by approaching that brother, and what does Matthew 18 say? Right? If thy brother has trespassed against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. So one of the critical things here is, remember one of the questions was, should we raise it at a public meeting of the ecclesia? Not a good idea. If you want to win your brother, that's not a good idea. You don't put it on the agenda of a business meeting. Brother K's pop music problem. You go and see the brother himself. And you start with this assumption that you don't necessarily have all the facts or all the evidence at this stage. So you say, look, brother, there was something that cropped up the other day that upset me personally. And I thought, I wanted to come and have a talk to you about it because I don't know all the circumstances. And I thought the best thing to do would be just to come and have a chat and see what the story was. Oh, yes, what's that? Well, it's just that I noticed the other day after the meeting, you know, you went roaring off down the thing. And I don't know if you realised it, but your window was down and there was this pop music blaring and I just didn't think that was a good idea. There might have been something that I'm unaware of, but you know, can we have a chat about that? And so you lead your way into that discussion. You give him room to move, to discuss, to talk. Now, it might be that he says, look, you're absolutely right. I knew down the road that I shouldn't have done it. I was feeling angry at the time. Thanks for raising it. You don't have to worry, it won't happen again. Or he's going to say, well, what's it to you? You know, you choose your music, I'll choose mine. You choose your truth, I'll choose mine. All right, we're back to postmodernism. You think, we have got a problem. We've got postmodern thinking. The pop music is only a symptom of postmodern thinking. So we've got to try and deal with that. And it could well be, as Ben said on the table there, and as that table concluded, is it might well be that we actually bypass the pop music issue. We say, look, the real issue here is actually not your music. I might not agree with it, but I don't think the issue is the music. The issue here is that you feel that you've got the right to do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to, even if it upsets half the ecclesia. And I don't think that's actually really the spirit of Christ. Can we talk about that biblically? Because that really worries me, more than the music. Can we talk about that? Yeah.
Just one of the questions that came up in our group was, what if you don't have a very good relationship with that person? Is it ever a good idea to go and talk to someone else who you know does have a good relationship with them, who they may listen to more than you? Is it a good idea to do that for the purpose of trying to make sure it doesn't become a bigger issue between you and that person when there are personal issues involved? Or?
Any thoughts on that? Any views on that? Yes. 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 Yeah. Okay.
I think that you prepare yourself before issues like this happen to be in a position to give counsel. And if you have ignored that brother and you don't have a relationship with them, especially a relationship of respect, you're going to be in a very difficult position if they're coming from postmodernist thinking to get through in one engagement. And I think that you have to consistently show that you care and that you love. And not just in a sense of, I care when I'm ready to give you criticism, but I care in the sense that I had you over for dinner the other night. And I care in the sense that I'm going to take you on the ride to the conference. And I care in the sense that I'm going to take you out for dinner. And then when you have this conversation, he knows that you're not just on the attack, that there's substance behind this. Because what I think we use our biggest technique to bring about change in others is criticism, which is the worst technique. And we need to make sure that it doesn't come across like that.
Yep. Yes.
So where was the reference that know those which are spiritual among you, that you may restore such an one?
Yes, that's Galatians 6, verse 1. If a man be overtaken in the fault, is that the one? So just coming back to that is, I mean, it's a very good question. The fact is that even with our best endeavours in ecclesial life, Brother Islip Collier wrote a very good article in his book Conviction and Conduct, I think it is, and it's about the ecclesia, and he says this, quite an interesting observation. He says, you know, it's okay to have friends in the truth, good friends. Okay to do that, because it's just a natural consequence of life is that we're drawn towards some more than others. You can't help that. It's just to do with our personality and our culture, our background and our interests. Even within the meeting, you're more drawn to some people than others. But he said you can't have 10,000 close friends. You're in fellowship with 10,000 brothers and sisters or more besides, but you can't have 10,000 close friends. But he said the interesting thing is that your fellowship responsibilities are actually much more onerous towards those that you are in fellowship with to whom you're not personally drawn and that you don't find likeable. The awkward, the prickly, the cantankerous, the aggressive in the meeting, the shy, the timid, the private, the secretive. There are lots of people with personalities that aren't easy to deal with in ecclesial life, and despite our own best endeavours, we may not be able to get close alongside every single member in the ecclesia because they, for some reason, may not relate to us, despite our best intentions. But I think the point that you made was right about Matthew 18. By the way, I'm not taking away from Ben. Ben's comment is absolutely right, is that our endeavour in ecclesial life should be to build such a strong rapport with all of our brothers and sisters that they know that we love and care and are concerned for them and for our community, that at least if you have to raise something, you're not coming from zero point, and worse still, from hostility. But even if it is someone that you may not feel particularly close to or not certain about, why would it be a good idea to apply Matthew 18 and go and approach them first yourself rather than bringing someone else in, even if that person might be able to do a better job, why would it be better for you to apply Matthew 18?
Get both sides of the story.
Because you're the person that's got the concern to start with. If you pass it on to someone else, that wasn't their concern. That was your issue with the brother. Christ's counsel is, if your brother trespass against you, you go and tell him. You go and talk to him. And you go and do it privately. So you give the brother the dignity of the fact that this is a private discussion. Why would it be still good to apply Matthew 18, even if you may not feel 100% confident about the strength of your relationship? That's true. The more people that come to talk, and if they find that the other person's been sent because you were concerned, that makes it even worse in terms of your relationship with them. But I think it's another good thing. If you're not 100% sure about how they may react, what will your biblical responsibility do if you are now going to approach this brother that you might think is a bit tricky? What's your biblical responsibility? You're the one that sees all these scriptures. Well, you're going to have to do some scriptural application too. So how, with what spirit will you now approach this brother that you're not completely sure about?
Is it the spirit of the watchman?
Yes. I was thinking actually something slightly different to that. I was thinking more that you will do your very best to humble yourself before your brother and to make it clear that you have struggles in life, issues in life that you worry about, anxieties in life, things that you don't feel proud about, things that you're struggling with in life, and you make it clear that you don't think for one moment that you're any one whit above him or any other brother in the meeting. And you do your best to show a spirit of graciousness before that brother in terms of talking to him, so there is nothing in your tone or style or language that he could take offence to. Now, why has that been good? That's been good because you've had to submit to the Spirit of Christ and do your very best to win that brother. And, as was said, if that approach is successful, what that may now mean is that you have, funnily enough, forged a new bond of communication with that person. Because if you do it in the right way, as Galatians says, and restore them in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself also, you may have just made a friend that you didn't have before. And a person that actually would quite like to talk to in the future if they've got a problem. Do you know why? Because they know that you won't bite their head off. You were extraordinarily gracious. You were patient. You were wise. You were thoughtful. You were careful. You were kind. And you showed all of that in the spirit and tone that you used. Has that been good for you? As well as for them? Yeah. So you've grown spiritually out of that matter of applying Matthew 18 as well. So, the net result of all that is, number one, I think we've concluded that we wouldn't leave the issue undealt with, but we may find in trying to deal with the issue that we actually probe deeper and find there is a deeper problem. We've got to try and help this brother get back to a spiritually stable life, because that's in fact where it's all going wrong, is they've started to lose the truth. They haven't been implementing those vital things for spiritual life. So, this is an illustration of Bible reasoning for a problem. Was there a verse that said no pop music in cars after the meeting with windows wound down at a certain decibel level? No, there's no such quotation. Might there be some biblical principles that could be brought to bear on that principle, on that problem? Yeah, probably quite a lot. Well, my belief is, my challenge to you is, gentlemen, I don't think there's any problem in life that we can't solve from the Bible. There's nothing that we can't solve from the scriptures somewhere. And learning the secret of how to do this with every problem we face. Now, here's the thing. What I'm trying to suggest to you is, I don't want you going back to your ecclesias waiting to see who you can pounce on to apply biblical reasoning. I'm saying you need to go home and start pouncing on yourself. This is about how you think in the first instance, not about how you deal with others. What you've got to do is say, ooh, actually, why am I doing that? Let me do a little mind map on why I think I'm doing that, or whether I should or shouldn't, for myself. This is your biblical reasoning about your life. Once you're practicing biblical reasoning and trying to live by biblical principles, you might just be in a nobler and better position to talk to other people about biblical reasoning. But you can hardly do that if you're not practicing that yourself. So one of the challenges I'd like to suggest that you take home from this inaugural School of the Prophets is to say that we need to pick up the challenge of learning the skill of regularly trying to reason by biblical principles for everything we do, even in this deliberate sort of way. Because you astonish yourself with how much Scripture suddenly comes to bear. You think, wow, that's amazing. All of these biblical passages are relevant to this particular issue in my life. I've never thought about this before. Well, don't you think God's provided the handbook for anything you could ever face in life? Isn't it in the handbook somewhere? Go read. Go apply. And the beauty of this is, if we had ecclesias full of people that were reasoning biblically, what would happen to postmodernism in our ecclesias? Would die, as Jason says. And we would particularly like to see that happen. And also, it wouldn't just be that spirit would die. What you'd have is fantastically vigorous, thriving, vital ecclesias. And I can promise you they would grow. Well, you've got an ecclesia that's living that way, it positively vibrates with energy because God manifestation is at work. And you can just feel it. It happens. Starts to happen. There's spiritual growth. Iron is sharpening iron. Biblical principles are at work. Lives are being lived. God is being manifested in the midst of the multitude. That's what it's all about. So it's now coming up towards five-ish. What I wanted to do now, because we've got only half an hour till tea time, evening meal, is I wanted to say, okay, this was really just a test run, so you see how it works. What I'd now like to do is to suggest that we set another problem that you provide from the group, any problem you like. So don't come at this for a moment. What I'd like you to do is to sit down and talk again in your groups for 2 minutes and say, right, what do you think are the burning issues right now of your community, of your age group, of your ecclesial area? What are the big issues that you think that you're facing right now? And what we'll do is bring those out and we'll put one on the board and then we'll go lickety-split at it for half an hour and see what we can produce in terms of some biblical reasoning on that matter. All right, so 2 minutes just to consult together as a group as to what you think the big issues are for ecclesial life now. Let's call the group back to order, because otherwise we're going to run ourselves dangerously short of time, and I'd hate to do that. So what we're going to do is just put up on the whiteboard now what topics are suggested, and then as a group we'll make a decision on one topic, because we've only got we need to have this decided by 10 past, so that you've got 20 minutes to brainstorm. Okay, and we may even, by the way, run this over into tonight and spend the first bit of tonight just bringing back the results, so that you've got all of the rest of the time to brainstorm properly. So, issues. Any issues that people would like to put up that they think they'd like to cover?
Gossip.
What was that?
Gossip.
Okay. Personal, ecclesial, family? The whole lot?
Yes.
Okay, gossip. Okay. Okay. Anything else? Yes?
Dominant sisters and submissive men.
Whoa! Is that two separate topics?
No, that's one. One topic.
One topic. They don't necessarily go together, but I'll put them together for your benefit. Okay. Yes.
Entertainment, namely movies, TV, computer games, video games, assuming that they have something immoral or violent in them.
Would you be able to extend that to say going out to like bars and clubs?
That's probably a different issue. You want to put that up?
Sure.
So, what would we call
clubbing.
That?
Clubbing.
Is that the American term? Okay. Yeah, we've got an expert. Exactly. It's a disaster. Okay.
Lack of attendance at the meeting.
I'll put at meetings. Is that all right, Ben? It just widens it out in case you were thinking just of the memorial meeting. Yeah, anything else? Yes? Very good, very good. Did everyone hear that? Affinity with Christendom. Okay. We'll cover that a little bit later on in the weekend. We're going to talk about guarding the heritage of the truth, followed by a 60-minute question session, answer and question, right? Okay, and that will cover partly the Christianization of the truth as an issue. Okay? Good. Anything else? We could fit one more on the board. Okay. Right, what I'm going to do is give each group 1 minute to democratically decide what's their top vote. And I mean, I can take a show of hands for the whole lot if you like, but we need to narrow this down to one. So I'll take a show of hands on the whole lot, actually. That's probably the easiest way. So I'll give you all one vote. You're all allowed to vote for one topic only, and the topic with the greatest number will become your next 20-minute session. So here we go. You ready? Who votes for gossip? Two? Well, they were only two, but they were vigorous and enthusiastic and committed to. I want to record that. What's that?
That's like 5 more points then.
Yep, okay. Two. Two, okay. That's not an 11, that's two. Yep. Okay. Dominant sisters and submissive men. Who would like to vote for that?
We all be submissive men.
I'm not sure. I used to be uncertain, but now I'm not so sure. Okay, right. All right, that's pretty clear. Interesting, really, wasn't it? Even the promoter of the idea didn't vote for it. Now that's a worry. Okay, entertainment of all types and issues surrounding that. Both immorality and violence and other things. Okay? One, two, three, four. Okay, five. Okay? One, two, three, four, five. Whoa. Clubbing. Lack of attendance at meetings. One, two, three, four. Affinity with Christendom. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven it is. Affinity with Christendom. Your next 20 minutes. Go.